Hello and welcome to the Rancor's Brothel, episode 33-ish, I think. I'm your co-host Matt, and my co-host Dustin is absent. He's flying to New Mexico right now, so it's just going to be me and our special guest tonight. Special guest, you want to say hello?
Hello, my name's Aaron Bond.
Yes, he is. He's very special. Aaron Bond of the Bad Brain Curio Shop at an iTunes near you. You could find that on the interwebs.
Not on permanent hiatus.
Not on permanent hiatus. Good to know. Because it was like so me and Aaron go back a long ways. Like I think we first started being friends in like 1988, and it was like 88 or 89. And we have another friend that we've known for a very long time, Crystal Wolf of Chris and Chris Take Over the World. And they went on a hiatus, and Aaron went on a hiatus at the same time. And I was like, you motherfuckers, like, this is how I keep up with you guys in your lives. You can't do this to me. So glad to know it's not a permanent hiatus. This pleases me.
Our group's kind of bad about picking up the phone is what it boils down to.
I don't like talking on the phone.
Me neither.
I fucking hate it. So, guest questions for Mr. Aaron Bond.
All right.
Aaron, two of these questions are the same for everybody. The third one will just be whatever comes into my head. Okay. So number one, who's your favorite superhero and why? Or super person. It could be a supervillain if you prefer.
Superhero, just to scope this for me, does that actually mean have augmented human powers?
Batman, for instance, would be a perfectly fine example.
I think I'd actually have to go with Batman, probably.
Well, that's fucking cheating. I just said that one.
The reason behind it, and it's the same reason, I actually had this back and forth with a buddy of mine about Superman and why I really liked the new Superman movie, but he really disliked it. He disliked it because he's a big Superman fan and he thinks it betrayed the character. I let him know
Superman doesn't kill, right?
Well, that, and, you know, it's like the whole thing is supposed to be about hope for humanity. Like, they cram that down your throat, and then they basically destroy 50 city blocks and, you know, kill someone. And I could see that point. I wasn't really invested in the Superman character because I have a hard time putting myself in the place of I'm invulnerable and thusly heroic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of why I like Batman so much. Like, everything he's done has been sort of the product of his own making. Like, yeah, he's a complete badass. He knows like every kind of martial art known to man, essentially. He's technically a genius, but all of that is through like work of a human being. So he didn't get any assistance with that. If anything, like, you know, he was kind of on the trailing end of a, you know, sad orphan kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like him the best. 'Cause it's like, not only is this guy super powerful, but it's something you can aspire to, whereas I can't aspire to be Superman because I can't aspire to be born on a different planet.
Time. Right here. I'm going to go ahead and cut the video feed, Aaron.
Sure.
The Skype connection is only at 3 out of 5 bars. I would urge you to do the same. It'll just lower the good old bit rate and get us a higher quality audio. You were cutting in and out of here, Matt. You'll see an icon that looks like a camera.
Ah, okay.
At the bottom of your screen. There you go. Perfect. For the record, the icon that looks like a microphone, if you click that, that's your cough button.
Ah, okay.
So here, I'm going to practice. I'm going to cough right now. Are you ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Did you hear my cough?
I did not.
Awesome. Okay.
It's fucking magical.
One of my favorite Batman stories ever has to do with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we were children, you and me trick-or-treated together quite a bit.
Yeah.
And,
at least once a year.
Well, okay. Sometimes twice, you never knew. And one year you had, it looked like a Batman costume. But it was like the off-brand, you know, so it wasn't like Batman-licensed costume. It was like the Night Avenger, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you, like, You were so adamant that you were not Batman. You were the Night Ranger, goddammit. You were the fucking most angry 9-year-old I'd ever seen. I was like, no, you're Batman. No, I'm the Night Ranger. I'm like, the Night Ranger is not a thing. Batman's a thing.
I didn't really grow out of or into being grizzled. I think I came out just generally, very, what's the word I'm looking for here? Grizzled. I'll go with grizzled.
Okay.
But
you are not grizzled now.
Well, I'm trying to think. There is a term for this. Damn it.
Sounds like somebody needs to get their podcast going so they can have the word of the week again.
I used to remember words. God, what's it called when you look at the world in a very jaded fashion? You are... starts with an S, I believe. Doesn't matter.
Silly?
But, well, sure. We'll go with that.
Oh my god.
But yeah, surly. No, not surly. But you know, yeah, I've kind of always been that way. So
it just always struck me as funny. It's one of those stories I have in my mind.
I don't remember being adamant about it, but nothing about that story surprises me.
No, I am the Night Avenger. Okay. Okay, Aaron. Cool. Let's go get some fucking candy bars.
Like, everybody knows Batman and probably is willing to give Batman the bigger candy bar, but whatever.
They're like, oh, that poor deluded child. We should give him extra candy.
Yeah.
He thinks he's not. Adventure. He thinks he's Here's not Batman. Cool. Shit. Second guest question, Aaron. If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, this is a tough one. And I should have been prepared for this because you asked this of every guest. So, yeah. I would want to say, like, premonitions. I don't know if I'd want to see the future all the time, but only when it's something that's like, well, have you read or seen the movie Dune?
Yes, I've seen the remake.
Okay. So... the way sort of Muad'Dib sees the future is he can see all of the paths at once and see what they lead to. So he sees kind of like a multiverse future.
Okay.
And I thought that was probably the most usable form of premonition I'd ever seen. So I'd want that. I just want to be able to shut it off once in a while.
Yeah. Having it running full tilt all the time would completely suck.
Well,
because like as soon as you meet somebody, you would see their eventual death.
Yeah.
That makes it really hard to find like a lover.
Well, you know, even if you don't see their death, it's like, you know, you go out dating with this woman. Oh, it's like, four out of the five paths, we end up breaking up and you take all my stuff. So, you know, I think I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah. Or like, man, for the next 16 years, you look pretty good. Then you go down to about a 5. And then you just get really fat. I don't want to sign up for this.
The truth
is, have to see you later.
If I had eased into that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have noticed the transition, but when I see it all at once, it's a different story. So
it's very jarring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Plus, like when you haven't seen a kid for 5 or 6 years, you're like, good God, you're old, you know?
Yeah. My, look at how you've grown. Yeah, Dick, that happens every 5 years.
You're right. Thanks, Dad.
Aaron, third guest question.
Sure. This is a random one, right?
Yeah. In a 5-way brawl, which Star Trek captain would win? Bare knuckle boxing?
Bare knuckle boxing?
Yes.
I think Sisko.
Is it because he's black? Are you being racist, Aaron?
No, he's...
I'm kidding.
I do have justifications for this. So he's tall.
Okay.
Man's got reach, I definitely think.
Very broad-shouldered.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Picard was built. I don't think Shatner has a chance in hell right now, but he was okay in the time. But the other thing about Sisko is I think God is on his side.
Oh, really?
Well, didn't he become a god? essentially.
Oh hell, I don't ever never watch Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, he was from the beginning. He was basically like the Moses of. I'm gonna horribly butcher this, so I know that like Crystal right now is like gonna be screaming at the computer, but like he became Moses to the Bajorans. So, and he eventually like ascended to godhood.
To so, the Bajorans or was it the Cardassians?
The Bajorans.
Okay.
The Cardassians were the people who were enslaving the Bajorans.
Well, yeah, and they, you know, Kim Kardashian married Kanye and they got a baby. And Chewbacca, what's the other one called? Khloe Kardashian. They're just hideous, awful examples of humanity.
I'm going to let you finish. But I think Sisko was the best captain of all time. No,
oh my God. Spot on, sir. Spot on. All right. So no love for Sam Beckett.
I tried to watch that show. I really did. And the thing is, I thought the show had such a great premise, but it was the individual episodes that I saw, and granted, I only watched a little bit of the first season, but I just couldn't get into it because it was so stupidly written. Just like, it was so dumb.
Did you ever hear how it ended?
No.
The ending, this is probably the most epic ending of any Star Trek show.
Okay.
It ends with, it's with Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis, as captain of the, Enterprise like G or H.
Sure.
And they're in the holodeck reliving past captains.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Like that's what they would do for fun, is they would go back and like go through the adventures of past captains of starship vessels or Starfleet vessels.
So were they implying that these episodes were just them in the holodeck, or were these episodes like...
No, they were in the holodeck. It was like the... It's the Saint Elsewhere ending, where you find out it's actually all in the imagination of a comatose boy.
Technically, I think in the expanded Saint Elsewhere verse, I'm pretty sure Star Trek gets roped in if you look at the big chart, so... that's a ship in a bottle inside an autistic kid.
So the kid... is having the dream of Jonathan Frakes going in, oh my God, it's like fucking five levels deep in Inception.
It's
I'm gonna have to spin my top to get out.
And then it's holodecks all the way down.
Holodecks all the way down. We need a bump, quick. Get Joseph Gordon-Levitt in here.
Yeah.
You know what made water come out my nose, Dick?
Sorry, dude.
Aaron.
Yeah.
It's time for the Star Wars Minute.
Alrighty.
Usually this is where I would inform Dustin, who has watched the Star Wars movies, but knows essentially nothing about any of the background information in them. Mm-hmm. Essentially, he submits a question to me weekly about something to be learned, to be taught about. Okay. But with Dustin not here, I just want to point out something about Star Wars.
Okay, sounds good.
When the Star Wars... re-release happened, the special edition in, what, 97?
Mm-hmm.
Each movie came out to theaters for 2 weeks at a time. So in a six-week span of time, we had all three Star Wars in theaters. And you and me, at that age, we were at a time when every weekend we would get with our group of friends and one of the parents would drive us and drop us off somewhere and we'd go do something fun together. Yep. Which our parents, I'm sure, all loved to get us out of the house. So it was beneficial to everybody.
Yeah.
Somewhere between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, or during Empire Strikes Back, when that was in theaters, I got my midterm back and I had a D. And I'd never had a D before.
Yeah.
And my parents grounded the fuck out of me. To the point that, like, I wasn't allowed to go out with friends. And I wasn't allowed, you know, like your standard stuff, TV, blah, blah, blah. But the caveat, like, I mean, I lost my shit for a minute because once it sunk in that I realized, oh my God, Star Wars is only in theaters for the 6 week period and I'm grounded during it, I will not see Return of the Jedi in theaters. I fucking lost my shit.
Yeah.
But the caveat was I wasn't allowed to go out with my friends. I could still go to the movies. So I called you up, or we talked at school or something, and I figured out what showing I was going to go to, and then you met me at the theater.
Ah.
Do you remember that?
I remember that you got grounded, and I remember that we were trying to figure out, because I think we also tried to figure out ways that we could convince your parents, and then we just decided that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. So we met at Return of the Jedi, yeah. And, you know, thoroughly enjoyed the film. I think actually the first time I had watched the entire run of Star Wars, like in a sitting, it was with you. Because you had the box set of the VHS tapes. Because you were so super cool. But yeah, no, so you are responsible for much of my Star Wars-y-ness. Because you really introduced me to that world.
Believe it or not, I introduced Adrian to it, too.
Oh, very good.
She had never seen it before, and so we stepped through the box set that I have, which unfortunately is only the remakes. You can't get, or maybe you can get the original cuts on DVD, but I'm not sure
where.
You can't? I didn't think so.
The last thing to be released of the old cuts was the Laserdiscs.
Oh, I knew there was a reason I wanted a Laserdisc player other than I'm a nerd.
Mm-hmm. If you get yourself a Laserdisc player, you could find all three of those on eBay. You could probably get the whole set for maybe $25.
Really?
Yeah, it's really not that bad. Like, not pricey at all.
They must have made a lot of them, probably assuming that Laserdisc was cool and would hang around for a while.
Well, yeah, and you remember there was when the box set came out, like the last VHS box set, it was like one of them had like Vader on the front, one had a Stormtrooper, and then one had Yoda.
Yep.
And so the Laserdiscs came out in that series too, so that it's the same like cover printing. So okay. Like Vader, Stormtrooper, Yoda. So yeah, that was the last thing you could get with the newly made with the Greedo shooting second.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because there were several scenes where I sort of like paused the movie for Adrian and was like, this doesn't really happen this way. You know, like, Han shot first, damn it.
There's not this scene in the hangar with Boba Fett.
That awful, awful song in the cantina. God.
What, with the Max Grebo band?
Well, the one where it's like a full-out like jazz singer dancing around.
Oh, that's in Jedi.
Is it in Jedi?
Okay. Yeah, it's in Jabba's palace.
I just remember it being awful. And then, of course, you
oh,
know,
me explain... day. It was called the Jedi Rock, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, the ending where it's like, oh, there's what's his name? Young Anakin. I can't think of the actor's
Hayden
name.
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, there's Hayden Christensen standing there. It's like they edited out a guy like only shot in the film. Who's been in all the films, but you can't see his face. They cut him out right here.
Well, and, you know, they didn't do that on the initial DVD release.
Really?
Yeah, when it first got put... when it first got put the DVDs, they didn't do that. Then after episode 3 came out in theaters, then all printings had Anakin in the Jedi, like in the blue ghost scene at the end.
See, I can see a lot of the changes, you know, under the argument of it's my piece of art, you know, but that one, it just felt like, you know, you're cutting out work some guy did, and he was very proud to be a part of this universe, and you're basically nullifying him in history.
Yeah, like, does he still get his residuals?
Well, probably.
I mean, he was still in the suit when he takes the mask off.
Yeah, that's you could still see him.
But. Yeah. Well, that's a fun fact. That concludes the Star Wars Minute. Unless, Aaron, you have any random stupid Star Wars question I could help you answer?
Do we have any history of what came before the Senate or how the Senate was formed? I don't know much about the expanded universe.
No.
No? Okay.
I
was just curious if there, because the, you know, the Galactic Senate is kind of like our, you know, the Star Trek our Federation. That's happening right now, folks. Didn't you know?
Right now. Join Starfleet.
But, you know, it's sort of this collection of different alien cultures to govern, and that doesn't happen, you know, just out of nowhere. I was wondering if there was any history behind it, but maybe there isn't. I don't know.
I mean, like, okay, in the expanded universe... it's written that the Galactic Senate has been around since like for 25,000 years.
Sure.
But in the movie, they say it's only been 1,000 years. So, I mean, there's, you know, you kind of got to roll with it. I don't know the history. I honestly don't, of how that came to be. The earliest novels right now have to deal with the Lost Tribe of the Sith.
Okay.
Which is a storyline following a ship full of Sith soldiers and Sith masters crashing on a planet that had its own sentient species that were force capable, but they were pre-industrial.
Okay.
So they couldn't repair their ship and get off planet.
Okay.
And so they were there for like 20,000 years. Just evolving with the people there. It's a very interesting story, and so they've come back into the Star Wars universe now. Another ship crashed, and they were able to get off planet. And so now there's a whole planet full of Sith.
Okay.
Just entirely fucked up.
Here's another question for you, then. So, I know the Sith, they believe in using the dark side of the Force, the more, like, you know, anger, hate, etc. side. Would you say that the Sith are inherently evil, or are the Sith kind of like Slytherin, whereas, you know, their proclivities will make a lot of them evil, but not necessarily evil? Like, it's just the side of the Force that they use tends to drive them that direction.
Well, if anything came about from the prequels, it can tell you that the government put in place, the Empire, was a legitimate government.
Yeah, that's true.
So was that an evil plot? I mean, you know, it was done with evil intentions. I would like to rule the universe. But when you, like, when you go into the expanded universe and you get to read the inner monologues of these people, like Palpatine, for instance, or Anakin, which we get a part of in the prequel movies, he does say about how just one person should make the decisions, bypass all of the arguing and committees in the Senate. You get the idea that the Sith, yes, while they want to rule, that's because they want to rule a universe in order.
Yeah.
They want the absence of chaos. I'm sorry?
I was going to say they believe in, like, a benevolent dictatorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you take that aside, you know, Palpatine was racist. He had Wookiee concentration camps. Things like that. But, I mean, I don't know. Because there are dark Jedi as well. They're not Sith. They tap into the dark side of the Force.
Huh, interesting. So what makes a Sith if not the dark side of the Force? It's like, it's obviously a tribe, but what unites them? Like, is there an you know, there's not obviously not an ethnicity, but you know, that's a good point. If there's a dark Jedi, what separates a dark Jedi from a Sith?
Couldn't tell you.
Alignment. Okay.
Couldn't tell you. The way I would liken it to is in the Dragonlance universe. Mm-hmm. We talk about mages. You have red-robed, black-robed, and white-robed mages. Mm-hmm. So we throw the red robes out because they're neutral, but if you take the black robe and the white-robed mages, white-robed mage is good. And what that means is that they use magic for the betterment of mankind or the betterment of intelligent species. Mm-hmm. Black magic users use magic for their own personal gain.
Okay.
That is what I would think the difference between a Jedi and a Sith was.
Okay.
Two sides of the same coin.
Sure.
I don't know. That's just me.
No, that's interesting. I mean, and I honestly trust your opinion on it more than most. Because like I said, you know, you and I got together and, you know, we may have started the Star Wars journey together, but you went way deeper than I did, man.
Yeah, I fell down that rabbit hole pretty hard. Anywho, I guess that'll conclude the Star Wars Minute this week. Aaron, we're going to move on to something we call the Verses here at the Brothel, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
I am an avid listener.
No, thank you. Dustin was supposed to contribute the Verses this week, which he picked Gambit versus the Green Lantern. And I thought, you know what? When it's just me and Aaron, I want to do something special for Aaron.
Okay.
There were several video games that you and I played many, many times. And so the two characters that I want to have fight today are Mega Man.
Yep.
And Locke from Final Fantasy VI.
Ooh, okay.
Shit. Now, okay. Caveat. Mega Man can have all of his X armor.
Yep.
He can have the little, whatever, what's projectile weapons from all the bad guys he's beaten.
He can or he cannot?
He can.
Okay.
And Locke can have learned any spell from Final Fantasy and can have whatever relic or armament or weapon that you would like him to carry.
Hmm. Okay. That's tough. All right.
Yeah. Who would win in a fight between those two motherfuckers? Oh, and, right. Oh, damn it. What was the, I got to look up the list again. Shit. We had a setting for this fight. I believe you chose number 17. Is that correct?
I did.
All right. Let me reopen this mail here. Because I fucking forgot which one was 17. Okay. 17 is Jay Leno's garage.
Awesome.
For those of you not in the know, Jay Leno has an airplane hangar for a garage.
Okay.
He collects and restores classic cars. That's his hobby. And he has something like the largest private car collection on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty big. And it's full of extremely expensive, rare automobiles. Millions upon millions of dollars worth of cars.
All right, so I'm going to start by putting Locke at a little bit of a disadvantage because as an air quote treasure hunter,
mm-hmm.
this is a very enticing room.
Yeah, there you go.
Very
that's where the setting is always an interesting point to bring up in these fights. He is a thief.
Yeah. All right. So Locke's got that going against him. If I remember the game right, you can equip up to two relics. So
yes.
I'd probably give him, there was, I don't remember the, it was the Knights something that gave you five attacks in one.
Oh, no. Aaron, my friend.
Yeah.
I get this game out every year and play it all the way through.
Wow, nice.
You want him to have the Offering, which when you select fight on the battle screen will allow him to hit his enemy four times.
Okay. I think it's actually named different in the Final Fantasy VI version for PlayStation and Game Boy Advance.
Ah, very well. That's what could be. They have a Game Boy Advance for that, do they?
Yeah, it was one of the last things that was produced for the GBA, actually.
Oh my god, I'm going to have to go buy one.
Yeah, I've got it here, because as soon as they release it, it's like, I must own that. Like, mm-hmm. having that in my pocket is pretty important.
Well, I'll be going to Disc Replay this week.
So I'd probably give him that. I'd give him the leveled up Atma weapon, the sword, the Atma weapon, the sword, if you will.
The pork sword.
The sword. Yeah. And of course, he'd know all the spells, but I feel like he'd have to do something really clever to Mega Man in order to like level this playing field, because Mega Man's got a lot of shit.
Mega Man does have a lot of shit. So I want to go ahead and put the second relic for Mr. Locke would be the Thief Glove.
Yeah. So he can mug and steal from him?
So yes, instead of steal being one of his attacks, which just means the character goes over and pickpockets his enemy, hopefully stealing an item, it changes it to capture, which means he goes over, hits him with his sword, and taking away a lot of hit points, and then also steals from him. And since he has the Offering, that means he would actually do it four times in one hit.
Yeah, and that's four potential steals, which means he could probably start ripping off like those robotic weapons.
Yeah, like he could take the Magnet Man, projectiles, and the God. I don't even remember all the Mega Man enemies. There's like fucking 12 in every Mega Man that came out.
So, well, and what would be a good one to steal? Like, if he was clever, what would be the thing to steal to be like Mega Man's Achilles heel?
Oh, I'd start stealing that fucking X armor.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd get him powered down to just regular old NES Mega Man.
Yeah, but NES Mega Man was still a badass.
How many Mega Mans came out for NES? Six?
Well, it depends on whether or not you count. There were six for NES. Seven was Super NES. And then I think 7 and 8 were Super NES. And then you have 9 and 10, which were built NES style for like the Wii.
Okay. But now 7 and 8 were Mega Man X and Mega Man X2, correct?
No. They're actually separate games. Mega Man X and X2 is actually a different character that's very closely related and built by the same man.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. Dr. Light, I believe.
Yeah, well, depending on Some of the games call him Dr. Wright. Some of them call him Dr. Light, you know.
I love it. We would play Mega Man and Final Fantasy so much that, like, we would play the video games, and then when our moms would make us go outside, we would play those as games.
Yeah, we would pretend we were one or the other, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, fucking classic. I love childhood.
We were so nerdy about it, too, because, like, you know, when we played Final Fantasy, we actually did the, like, take two steps forward, take my action, take two steps backward.
You can't do that. I have a force shield. I absorb all magical damage. Oh, my God. Mega Man, just throw this out there. He's a complete robot. He is not a cyborg, correct?
That is right.
There's no biological components.
No, but he is sent.
We are going to lose, then, for Locke's magic abilities, we're going to lose any status-changing attack.
We're going to lose status-changing, but if you follow through the Final Fantasy series to when they had, like, kind of a future... Like if you go to Final Fantasy 7 and 8 and 9 and 10, when they had robots much more commonly in them, he gains a weakness against any lightning attack.
Okay, fair enough. So already we've got Bolt 3.
Yeah.
That'll fucking knock his ass out. But he has the Atma weapon. If he's leveled up properly, that's going to be each hit is going to be 9,999 hit points. How many hit points can fucking Mega Man really have?
Well, and that's, you know, how do you convert, like, little tiny dots into hit points, you think?
Well, do we have to, like, pretend that he is a playable character in Final Fantasy, at which point then they all maxed out their hit points at 9,999?
Well, and again, that depends on the game. Like, that was also, and this is a little programmer nerd in me, but that was also because the bit that they used to store the hit points, like, actually in the program,
uh-huh,
it's only that big. So it actually didn't have a numbers place to go beyond it.
Okay.
In the later games, you can actually move beyond 9,999 because the technology advanced far enough that they could count that high, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I do recall when in number 10 having some pretty heavy levels. But we are talking about Locke from Final Fantasy 6/3. We're going to max him out at 9,999.
So they probably would both have it. And the Atma weapon would do that against. It would do that against an enemy, but enemies can have higher than that amount.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, if he did capture once and he hit Mega Man four times with the Atma weapon when he's at his full level capacity, it would just fucking obliterate him, right?
Well, assuming Mega Man didn't have a strong evade. I mean, if he has a strong evade, like, he might miss three out of those four times.
It's very possible. It's very possible. Now, with Mega Man, does he have any fight skill in any of the games that is a one-hit kill?
It's all about the enemy he's up against, right? Because, like, the top spin, or whatever it was called, from Mega Man 3, whichever Robot Master it was that was weak against that, it was a one-touch done.
Yeah, like, there was Woodman was one of the bad robots, and if you had already beat Fireman and you had the Fire Blaster,
he was
one-hit kill. Would there be a one-hit kill for Locke? For a human?
Well...
Probably any of them, honestly.
Like, throw shiny stuff and shoot in the back?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's armored. You know, he's ready for plasma weapons and what have you.
Probably. Well, would he be ready for plasma weapons? I mean, this was a steampunk world. And steampunk has some technology, but it doesn't have anything like what you would see in Mega Man. So,
well, magic tech armor would shoot him with a beam, a laser.
Yeah, that's true.
And he would survive.
That's true.
If he's properly leveled up and wearing armor.
Yeah. I might have to say Locke. I don't see how Mega Man can come out ahead on this if Locke is properly equipped.
I agree. I think any character from Final Fantasy III, I think fucking Gaw or Setzer would, if they were leveled up and had learned all the magic, I believe that they could take him out.
Yeah.
If anything, give him a gem box and an economizer and just start casting Ultima on the bitch.
Yeah. 50 Ultimas later.
I always loved Quick. You get the gem box, the economizer, and then you cast Quick on yourself. Fucking loved it, man.
Didn't that give you two actions in one, I think?
Yeah, so you could essentially then, because you already paired up the gem box and the economizer, you could in one sitting cast Ultima like five times. So, yeah, Kefka was my bitch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Another good combination, as long as we're talking and geeking out over this game that we both love, was the Genji Glove and the Offering, or whatever the Knight's version is in that, because the Genji Glove gives you two weapons, which you hit once with each, and then the Offering gives you four times, so it's like eight hits, essentially.
Yeah. It was beautiful, man. God, fucking love Final Fantasy III.
Yeah, that was great.
Like I said, every year, especially during winter, I get the Super Nintendo out, dust it off, plug it in, and I play Final Fantasy III until, you know, from start to finish.
Did I tell you I went to a concert with that was put on by the guy that did the music from Final Fantasy 3/6?
No.
And they actually did the opera. Like, they had two opera singers do the opera in English.
That's so fucking cool.
It was amazing. I'll have to get you the CD, man. It's really good.
Where do you find this stuff? You went to that concert? I remember a couple years ago you went to a Christmas carol done completely in Klingon.
I can't take credit for that one. Someone else.
And the cast was dressed up as Klingons. Tiny Tim used a Klingon sword as his crutch. That's beautiful, man. Like, where do you find this shit?
I think my favorite part of that particular one was the Ghost of Christmas Past was played by a Klingon who didn't have ridges.
Oh.
Like the original series.
He was a TOS Klingon, huh? Yeah. Wow. Dude, like, okay. That's insane. Like, I feel like Jack Nicholson in Batman, and I'm like, where does he get those wonderful toys?
And it was in the original Klingon with subtitles. They had a projector with subtitles going.
Fuck me running. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You're such a dick.
Sorry, dude.
Okay, so that'll conclude the verses this week. Locke from Final Fantasy III would decimate Mega Man.
Woohoo!
So,
Treasure Hunter.
What, chicken butt. Moving on, sir. Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
We're here today to talk about something that happened 50 years ago. The death of JFK. No, Aaron here was one of the many folks that got to go to theaters across the nation last week and go to the Day of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aaron, I want you to tell us about your experience that day.
Okay.
How it was for you as a Doctor Who fan. Mm-hmm. And then I want you to tell me why the fuck I should watch Doctor Who, because I've tried.
Sure.
I can't get past Eccleston.
Well, and that's kind of understandable. Eccleston's an acquired taste. Really, well, all the...
I loved him in G.I. Joe, and he was great in Thor 2. He was the bad elf.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and I have to ask here, what's your spoiler policy here? Because we are talking about the 50th, which is pretty much the latest episode.
Spoil the fuck out of it.
All right.
Spoilers from here on out. If you, the show's been on for 50 fucking years. Now the current incarnation is on its seventh season.
If you mean the current incarnation, they kind of like did the show in one format for like 30 or 40 years, took a hiatus. They had a movie, and that was...
Which you forced me to watch.
Okay. Which was kind of rough. And that was supposed to be a backdoor pilot that didn't get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they restarted in 2005 with Eccleston.
Okay.
Now, the current Doctor has only been on since the season 5 of that reboot. So, and we're on season 7 now, or we just finished season 7. So he's been around for two.
So if you're in the middle of it right now on Netflix or something and you don't want to ruin it, fucking just skip this and go to Follow Networks, go to followthe.tv and you know, click like and all that shit. So,
yeah,
Aaron, please spoil me.
All right. So the Day of the Doctor was, and this is interesting because with the reboot of the series, the people who were fans of the original Doctor Who still loved it, of course, because it's the same character, it's the same storyline, but they did something to really change the universe a lot. So the Doctor is from a planet named Gallifrey. And Gallifrey is inhabited by people called Time Lords, which he is one of. And think of Time Lords a little bit like, again, a little bit like this, the Federation from Star Trek.
They're Qs.
Except,
They're Qs, aren't they?
They're not quite Qs. Their perception is way better than ours as far as time goes, but they don't have ultimate power around it. But they do kind of stand as centuries for time, like when they watch time and they make certain that horrible things aren't happening. But other than like intervening in absolutely disastrous events, they have a prime directive. They have a non-interference policy, which is the reason the Doctor ran away. He couldn't deal with the extremely stifling look but don't touch society. Anyway, the new series started off and the Doctor seems fine, but he's really angry. And that might be part of the reason it's hard to get through Eccleston, is it kind of clouds the character in that respect, because he's very dark compared to a lot of the other Doctors. And we find out the reason for that is because there's been a war between the Time Lords and their oldest enemy, the Daleks.
Daleks,
yeah.
Bollocks.
It rhymes with bollocks, so that makes it easy to remember. And we can go into the deeper mythology in a bit, but what the Doctor did, and we don't get any details about what this means or why, but he's the only one who survived that war of either side. That's what we find out in the new seasons.
Okay, except, so he's the last son of Krypton?
Kinda, yeah.
Okay.
Except then you later kind of figure out that he's the one who did it. He ended the war by destroying his people and the other side.
That is dark.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would fuck you up, right? So
that puts me in a mind of Lobo from the DC universe.
Okay.
I'm he destroyed his entire planet.
Okay. So. Yeah. Well, and that's what the Doctor did. What really gets, and what I think the story that really shines, because it stops making that kind of a shadowy, like, why is this guy so angry sometimes character, and actually brings it to the forefront. There's an episode in the first season of the newer series with Eccleston called Dalek. And he actually meets a Dalek survivor of the war and just goes absolutely fucking apeshit. Which, again, if you know anything about the original series, that's a little bit weird, because the Doctor didn't lose his shit. Like, the Doctor was always calm, even a little bit cocky. And, you know, this is clearly a guy suffering from post-traumatic stress. The only reason he did this is to wipe these things off of the face of the universe. And there's this guy here who's, you know, the embodiment of everything he hates, who survived as well. But anyway, like, we're never given really any details about the Time War or what happened or what he did, and the Day of the Doctor fills in those blanks. It fills in, like, not only is this something the Doctor did, we see how he did it, how he made those choices, what, you know, how far it took him to get there. And one of the big twists that they came up with shortly before the Day of the Doctor, the Eighth Doctor, and we can go into regenerations in a bit too, because I'm sure anybody who's unfamiliar with Doctor Who won't know why there's numbered Doctors, but the Eighth Doctor, we only saw on screen once, and that was in that terrible movie that I had to watch.
Yeah.
And while the movie was really bad, the character was really kind of cool. So everybody was kind of sad that McGann never came back and never did a regeneration, and we never know how he died or anything like that. They explain that McGann stayed out of the war as much as possible. The Eighth Doctor did. He wanted nothing to do with, like, these two races destroying each other. He had no love for his own people because they, you know, he found them kind of stuffy and stifling. And of course, the Daleks are pure evil. So he tried to stay neutral in all the thing, in all the stuff. But what happened was he found towards the end that he just wasn't going to be able to do it. And this group called the Sisterhood of Karn, who know Time Lords very well, they had their time sensitive too, so they could see the future in which essentially we all burn because this war just engulfs everything. Says, how many people do you want to die? Do you want to die because you won't step in here? And he's dying in the meantime too, so he's starting to regenerate. And she's like, we can control this and we can make you something, you know, something other than just what would randomly happen. We could make you a warrior.
Oh my God, sorry. My iPad just opened.
Oh, okay. Weird. And that was interesting, A, because we don't see that very often. It's kind of hinted that regenerations aren't necessarily random. But this was the first time somebody said, we'll just make you what you need to be. So he said, make me a warrior. And he renounced his name as the Doctor and regenerated into this character, which is between the Eighth Doctor and Eccleston, that we had never heard about until the finale of the last series. Who was the one who actually fought in the Time War and actually destroyed the planet.
That's deep, man.
Well, it was interesting because, like, there's a reason, like, he actually has said, you know, I consider and this is Matt Smith, the latest one talking, he's like, I consider myself the 11th Doctor because that guy is not the Doctor. That's somebody who didn't hold up to the promise of the name. You know, he did something so awful, I don't even want to recognize him.
Hmm.
And in the Day of the Doctor, the actual, the special, the War Doctor, as he's referred, that's the warrior guy who was created, steals an ultimate weapon that could destroy the Daleks and the Time Lords alike and freeze them in a moment of time, so that they can't affect the rest of the universe ever again and essentially will cease to exist. But, you know, they tell him this weapon has a conscience. It actually is sentient. And so this woman appears who's actually one of his, it appears in the form of one of his earlier companions to talk to him about what he's going to do.
Is it Rose?
Yeah.
She's hot.
She is hot, and it wasn't just Rose, because Rose, you find out at the end of the first of the new series, becomes a godlike being called the Bad Wolf Being.
It's a weird name.
Well, it was sort of like an emblem that she used, like whenever she was trying to signal the Doctor, she would have Bad Wolf written somewhere, because she could write it across all of time. But the Bad Wolf Being is what appeared to this War Doctor, who, of course, had no idea who she was because he hadn't met her yet, and was like, you need to know what's going to happen to you if you use this weapon. So she brings him in contact with the 10th Doctor and the 11th Doctor so that he can see.
And that's Matt Smith and then
David Tennant.
Yeah, Barty Crouch Jr.
Right.
Okay.
And what she eventually describes to him, because David Tennant is not as angry as Eccleston was, which makes sense because he's a little bit further removed from the war. But
well,
he
spent all that time around Dementors too. That's gonna kill you.
That'll do it. You know, soul sucking. You know.
Also, you are the man that introduced me to Harry Potter, so fuck you, Aaron.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I was working at the library at the time, you know, I guess it fits.
Yeah.
But so what she refers to Tennant as is the man who regrets. And then, Matt Smith's Doctor, the 11th Doctor, who is like 400 years older than the other two, is the man who forgets. Like, he doesn't remember that he counted how many children would be playing on Gallifrey the day he sets off the weapon. Whereas David Tennant says, here's the exact number.
All these doctors are the same being, correct?
They are. I've seen an interesting theory about how that works. I mean, should we just jump into regeneration since we
don't need to sum up the whole series here.
Sure. Day of the Doctor in 3D, by the way, was amazing. It was absolutely fantastic. And we saw it. We went early in the morning, saw Catching Fire, played around in the mall for a while, and then went to see Day of the Doctor. So by the time we came home, I barely recognized I was still in reality. But
how was Catching Fire?
Very good.
I'm so fucking jealous.
Really? You haven't seen it yet?
Yeah, I can't get Natalie into Hunger Games.
You've read it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it did a very good job with the book. In a way, I kind of wish I hadn't read the book, because I would have been more surprised by certain aspects of it. But, you know, I'll see if you, when you see it, we'll have to talk, and I'll see if you picked up on the same stuff that I did in that respect. But
okay. Yeah, I'm too old to pretend that I'm grounded and go to a movie by myself. When you see a guy that looks like me in the theater by themselves, you pretty much expect them to be masturbating.
Sure. So. You know, the big popcorn bucket over your junk. I get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so regeneration. And this was, I think, originally just a writing trick because they started a sci-fi show to boost ratings and then realized it was extremely popular, but their main actor was extremely old. Mm-hmm. but regeneration, the Doctor and all Time Lords can cheat death by basically they're phoenixes. They can be reborn again, and they change when they're reborn, but they retain all of their memories. And what I've heard some fans describe the regeneration as, and I think that this was pretty brilliant, everything that was nature about who the Doctor is, all the quirks that were just built into, you know, how his brain was wired, those change and become different.
Okay.
But everything that was nurture, because it's based off his memories and how those memories affect a person, stays the same. So you have a character who is the same, but is not the same. They'll react in some of the same ways. They'll have some of the same feelings about it. But it would be like, you know, two brothers reacting to something. They'll be very similar, but a little bit different because the wiring is just different.
Mm-hmm.
So each new Doctor is actually played very differently because they're expected to be a different character. But there are supposed to be things that carry through the whole way.
Hmm.
So, and it started, like I said, it started out as a writing trick to sort of like save the series from the mortality of the actor. But in the end, it became a really important part of how the series works and how the mythology works too. So that's regeneration in a nutshell. Let's see. You asked me another question. What was that we were talking earlier?
I don't recall.
Why should you watch this show?
Yeah, why should I watch this show?
Well, okay.
You more than anybody else that I'm not related to or married to, know me the best.
Yeah.
Why would Mad Etter like this show?
You like shows with a very deep mythology, a strong history behind them, and you like what I would call like classic sci-fi with a message behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And Doctor Who epitomizes all of that. A lot of the things I like about Doctor Who are some of the same reasons I like things like Star Wars and Star Trek. That kind of expanded universe concept where if you dig deep enough, you can sort of find other, you know, historical reasons for everything. Or, you know, this affects this, affects this, affects this, and this is why we are where we are today. That kind of stuff is rampant in Doctor Who. Now, like a lot of things with those expanded universes, there, of course, are problems with that, too. You know, just like how Star Trek and Star Wars sometimes have their internal inconsistencies.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Who suffers from some of that. But at the same time, what I really like about the show, and part of the reason I gave it a chance in the first place, because I was pretty reluctant to watch the new one. Crystal showed me 2 episodes of the Eccleston era. The first one I didn't like very much at all, which was the pilot.
And yeah, I think with the fucking mannequins and shit.
The mannequins. And a lot of that was they didn't explain enough in that it was a historical context thing and not just cheap effects. Those mannequins actually were the Third Doctor's first enemy, which I thought was really interesting back in like 1960 something.
Oh, okay, that is interesting.
So that's the reason that they brought those back for this one, was sort of like a touchstone of, hey, classic Doctor Who fans, this isn't just like us rebooting a show and using the same name. It is the same character in the same universe. The second episode, however, I found really just very deeply jarring.
Is it
emotionally
the second episode with Eccleston?
Yeah, the one where the Earth blows up.
Yeah, where they go to the end of the Earth and the last human being is like a bag of skin.
Yeah, and that moisturized me. Yeah, I love that lady.
Yeah.
And again, the effects were cheesy, but I found there was a more deep story there, because, you know, when you look at it through the eyes of Rose Tyler, and part of the reason the Doctor has companions is so that, you know,
there's somebody for us to relate to.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's looking down and she sort of realizes this isn't just like a traveling companion or a very special man. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this guy may as well be a god. Like he can go to the end of my universe and watch my people die or rewind me back to the beginning. And it's sort of that, you know, like that was sort of her coming to grips with, I'm playing with fire.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the cheesy effects, particularly in the first one, and again, Eccleston's performance, which I didn't quite understand because I didn't know the history of the whole thing, was something that was really hard for me to get past. And the movie, while I enjoyed it, primarily because I liked McGann, I liked the way he played the character, was bad television movie production. I mean, it was a very bad television movie style thing, even though there were some very redeeming qualities to it.
I do recall that.
Yeah. The fact that the new series sort of like takes the historical context and does the best that they can to be true to that while still using modern enough effects that we believe it more kind of ties it all through for me. And also, I just like the story of the warrior who did the ultimate sacrifice in a lot of ways. He killed everything he knew in order to protect everything else. And now
he made the Spock choice.
Yeah, well, he made the Spock choice, and now, like, starting in the new series, he's just wandering, kind of lost. Before, he was running away from responsibility and from his society. And when that kind of character has to turn around and say, you know, not only have I turned my back on you because I think that you're, you know, you all are kind of prudish, but now I see that you're all of existence and I'm going to take you out because of it. That's a deeper story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really liked the growth of the character through that. And they've done a really good job of carrying that through. All of the Doctors since that event have had their scars from that. Even Eleven, who's supposedly, you know, air quote, forgot. And so, like, all of them have had to kind of deal with the fact that they're the last Time Lord, the survivor, and not only that, the one who destroys worlds. So, you know, it's interesting from that aspect. I really like the history behind it. The deeper universe stuff is really fascinating to me. They have a lot of characters that they kind of, I'm trying to do this without giving away anything so that, you know, when you watch it, you aren't like, well, Aaron told me this, you know, that kind of thing. But there are a lot of characters that grow in ways that I didn't expect. And it really caught me off guard and I thought were really cool, but I can't tell you that, you know, specifically because it'll ruin it for you. But, the reason I'd watch it is honestly the other thing that I will say about Doctor Who, and it was harder for me, when we look at things like Star Wars and Star Trek, and other kind of classic sci-fi stuff, it's a lot more hard science fiction than Doctor Who is.
Okay.
Doctor Who walks a really fine line between science fiction and fantasy. And that's really hard to initially get in tune with. So a lot of the things that like kind of bothered me is that's just silly. You know, I sort of had to step back and say, well, how much sillier would that be than a lot of the fantasy novels that, you know, I've ever read, or a lot of that, those kinds of universes.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to look at it through a like strict science fiction lens, I think I have a lot of trouble with that. Because it is a fantasy story with a lot of sci-fi elements. I wouldn't say it's the other way around. So.
Well, that's interesting. I, you know, I've always felt that way with the Dragon Riders of Pern, which, as you know, is a big love of mine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can get a blend of sci-fi and fantasy together. That'll work for me.
Well, and I'd say the other thing that to know is the Doctor, it's best. The Doctor is absolutely terrifying. Like it has, Doctor Who has some very terrifying moments and monsters in it.
Like being chased by mannequins?
Chased by mannequins. That's not so bad. Really.
You know what? You say that, then you go to a department store and work overnights.
That's true. Like, I never thought of it from that. And maybe that's what happened in the 60s. Like, one guy fell asleep and woke up, like, in a closed mall. And he's like, I've got to fucking write this into my Doctor Who episode. But there are some very interesting monsters. The Daleks were interesting for their time. It's kind of like when you look at some of the storylines of Star Trek, the original series. They wouldn't necessarily hold up as, oh, that's revolutionary now. But it was a revolutionary idea then.
Mm-hmm.
So the Daleks were the most terrifying monsters, and it's clearly not because of their appearance, because they just look like overgrown, you know, tea kettles.
No, I'll tell you the most terrifying thing is those goddamn angel statues.
I was going to mention those. How much do you know about those?
Just the shit you told me like 10 years ago.
Okay. Well, they didn't exist 10 years ago.
Well, whatever. Fucking 6 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah. So... I'll start with the Daleks. I'll talk about the three big ones that I can think of as far as like Doctor Who villains. So the Daleks, which of course are the biggest, have been the enemies of the Time Lords since forever, because the Daleks were born in war by a genius who decided that he needed to create a race that their only goal was to survive. Like no matter what, survive. What got born out of that, because he decided this was the best way to make that happen, was to create these things that have no emotion other than hatred for anything that's not them. They're absolutely geniuses. And then he put them inside like nearly indestructible war armor. So what they essentially, he's created these incredibly xenophobic aliens that will kill you because you aren't what they are.
Okay.
And they hate you for that reason.
Fucking racist aliens.
Well, pretty much. But I mean, at the time, I mean, if you're talking about the 60s, we're talking about the civil rights era, that was an interesting idea.
Yeah.
And still kind of is, because he, you know, the thing that's interesting in that story is Davros, the guy who created the Daleks, wasn't wrong. They've persevered because they aren't held down by any emotion other than hating that guy over there. So let's go kill him. You know, that kind of thing. So that's the Daleks. The other one are the Cybermen. That's probably the other big classic monster. The Cybermen are people like you or me who've had their brains physically removed and placed into these cybernetic bodies. They call it upgrading. And the Cybermen, this is another reason I think you should watch. And I think that there have been people on Star Trek who've admitted this is true. The Borg idea in Star Trek was mm-hmm. born almost entirely out of Cybermen. Oh, like okay. The Cybermen are early archetypes for what the Borg were eventually written to be.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, there's actually a crossover comic where Star Trek and Doctor Who team up. And I'm not shitting you. It really happens. And the reason they do it is because the Cybermen and the Borg team up. But the Cybermen were originally, they were started just by, you know, oh, we replace limbs with cybernetic limbs so that people can go on after that. And then, you know, it's like, well, if I could have a cybernetic limb right now and I'm super strong, why not do that instead of my, like, natural limbs? And the progression happens so much that you end up replacing all of your body.
Yeah.
But
body modification to its finest.
Yeah. But as the doctor puts it, it hurts. So they add this inhibitor that prevents your brain from feeling, which sort of takes out that last shred of humanity. So you're kind of left with something that is trapped in a body, incredibly efficient, can't feel, even though it's like striving to do so. And thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread, so wants everybody else to, quote, upgrade too.
Oh.
So they invade worlds and upgrade the populations in much the same way that the Borg assimilate.
Resistance is futile.
And what's really terrifying about it, you know, in some
I'm
ways...
I'm sorry, I just think for a second there I broke you. You were like, yeah.
it is. It's true. And the thing I thought was really funny, because when First Contact came out, that was the first time you saw the full Borg assimilation process and how it was just like, we inject you with these things and you turn into a Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was terrifying at the time. It scared the hell out of me in like a really cool, I want to watch that again because it was scary as shit kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
The Cybermen are even scarier, in my opinion, because what they do is they just march people. They have these things that they can put on your brain that essentially kind of like shut you off, put you into a trance state. And they march you into these rooms, and they never show the bodies per se, but they just show this giant machine come down with like saws and needles and all these other things. And then you hear horrifying screaming as they're, you know, cut apart and made into Cybermen. So, like, where the Borg are just nice enough to inject you, like, they cut you apart alive.
Gross.
So they are pretty terrifying. The Angels, which are actually a new series villain, they're the Weeping Angels, and what they are is an ancient being that eat time energy. That's how they survive. And some of the way that they can do that is if, you know, we were talking about Muad'Dib earlier in Dune, you know, how he could see all the paths that you could take, but, you know, in the end, he's only going to take one of them.
Yeah.
They would feed off all of the paths that didn't happen.
Okay.
So all of the potential time energy that's lost is like food to them. So what they would do is they would touch you. And the doctor says it's the kindest, they're the kindest of the old monsters because they let you live to death. They'd touch you, they would send you back in time, and essentially eat the life you would have lived. So you would be sent away from your family, your friends, everything you know, and all of that potential stuff that would have happened, that's how they survive. The reason they're psychologically terrifying is because you can't... If you're looking at them, they are statues. They're what's called quantum locked. So they cannot move when they are being perceived. But if you look away, or if you blink, they can move ridiculously fast. So that's why the episode where they first appear, the doctor keeps saying, don't blink, blink and you're dead. Because even though they look like they're, you know, 5 miles away, you blink and it'll be right in your face.
That's so creepy. That's such a creepy concept.
Well, and that was what I was going to say. Like, I can recommend two episodes that I think that you would like just on the virtue of I think you like creepy things.
Okay.
And they're both on Netflix. Look up the episode called Blink. I think it's in third season of a new series.
And is that the creepy angel things?
Yeah, that's the first one, the Weeping Angels. And it's kind of a vignette. It's a story... It's one of the first stories that they call Dr. Light. So the doctor is in it, but it's more the story of the first person who meets the Weeping Angel. So you don't have to know a lot of Doctor Who lore to get the story.
Okay.
The other one I'd recommend, just because I think this one-off villain was really interesting, is called Midnight. And that's in season 4 of the new series. Midnight is... I'm not even going to describe it to you, just because I think that any description I would give you would, like, ruin the creepiness of it. But I know that there are Doctor Who fans out there. There's going to be two contingents, one that are thinking that I'm absolutely leading you the right direction, and another set that think I'm probably leading you to crap. But, you know, that's true of any.
Fair enough.
I'd say watch those two, and you can kind of get the idea of at least what a one-off storyline can be. One other thing I'll tell you about Doctor Who that I really like, especially in the new series, is that it's very carefully planned. If you're paying attention during the first season, like the first episode of the first season of the rebooted series, you start getting hints about what the villain is going to be at the end. And they're in the background. And if you pay really close attention, every series so far in the new sets of series has that. So if you pay really close attention, they've woven in where they're going to every story. And by, you know, usually by the fifth or sixth, you start to pick up on common threads. But then you go back and watch the first and you're like, God damn it, it was there all along.
Well, very good. Very good. Aaron.
Yeah.
We're going to have to end our time here today.
I know we were running late.
I want to thank you for Doctor Who-ing me this week. I've danced around it so much. I've tried watching it. I'm just going to have to hunker down sometime. I want to just take a week off of work and just fucking Doctor Who.
Well, and I'll say power through it. Because I felt the same way. This is going to sound funny by comparison, but I felt the same way about The Office.
Mm-hmm.
I really disliked The Office the first three episodes, but there was something about getting into the rhythm of the show that I eventually enjoyed the humor. Doctor Who was kind of the same way. Like, the first couple ones felt abrasive and obnoxious to me.
And until then once you got used to them.
Yeah, until I kind of acclimated to what the universe is like.
Okay.
And then I enjoyed them a good deal.
Well, very good. Aaron, thank you so much for all the information today. You like what Aaron said, you can check him out at the Bad Brain Curio Shop. You got a Twitter there, sir?
Yeah, I think it's just Bad Brain Curio.
All right, at Bad Brain Curio. Or your personal Twitter is?
Code Poetic.
Code Poetic. if you like it. Anyway, this is a Follow Networks podcast. Follow Networks creates all sorts of fun media type things. You can check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/follownetworks. You can go to our website, www.followthe.tv. You can check out all of our podcasts on there. We have Mad Chat. We've got The Rancor's Brothel. We've got Music to Your Ears featuring our sexiest employee here at Follow Networks. My wife. We've got The Zymologist. We have Instant Film Review. And starting past couple weeks, we've got the Heel Angle podcast, a wrestling fan podcast. So if you geek out on wrestling, go check out Dustin and Lucas and Aaron over at the Heel Angle. Go to the iTunes. If you haven't subscribed already, click subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating and review, please. Tell two of your friends to check it out. That's all I want for Christmas. and Aaron, every week, Dustin likes to end the show with a stupid joke. Dustin's not here, so I'm going to go ahead and channel his spirit. I've got a couple here for you. How many Doctor Who fans does it take to change a light bulb?
I do not know.
1,000,000. One to change the bulb and 999,999 to say that although the new bulb is okay, the bulbs they grew up with are much better.
Works with Star Trek too.
What does the doctor eat with spaghetti?
I do not know.
Dalek bread.
Oh.
Yeah, like Dalek bread, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
Why do Daleks eat apples?
I don't know.
Because an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
I should have guessed that.
Hey guys, have a good one and thanks for joining us here at the Brothel. We'll see you Wednesday and Thursday for some Battlestar Galactica action. So hit subscribe. We'll see you. Bye.
Bye.